Hello, and welcome to Routines and Ruts, the podcast about our daily rhythms and the inevitable stumbles we encounter in our days. I'm your host, Madeline Dorr, and for more than half a decade, I've been asking people about what their days look like, what they do, how they do it, when they do it. And this endeavor, in all its curiosity, has recently culminated in my very first book called I Didn't Do the Thing Today. It's all about taking productivity off its pedestal to find our own way of doing things. It's now available for pre-order, which I highly recommend, not only because it's a great thing for first-time authors to show booksellers that people are interested in seeing the book on their shelves, but it's also a great way to give yourself a permission slip to be less hard on yourself in the new year. You can find a link in the show notes to get yourself a copy if it sounds like it will be a comfort to you. So in the lead up to the launch of the book, I'll be answering your productivity guilt and existential quandaries here on the podcast. So I'll also pop a link in the show notes to where you can submit a question of your very own. It is important to note that I'm not actually a therapist or a licensed mental health practitioner. I'm a fallible human being who's making it up as I go along and perhaps just sharing what I wish someone would tell me. So I simply hope there's something to find amongst these musings that I'll share with you, and please feel free to cherry pick what resonates as we go along. This podcast, like all things in life, I think, is an experiment. And I had an idea for another little experiment within an experiment, and that is to share my routine and my rut of the week with you as a way to give you a little bit of a tidbit of reflection, what I've been experimenting with and what I've been learning, and maybe a jumping off point for you to introduce your own experiments into your days. My routine of the week. This is something that I have written about before, but I've cycled back to it in recent months. And that is this idea of finding your domino. So those of you who might have listened along or been reading my writing for quite some time in my interviews, you may already know that, surprisingly, I'm not someone who's very good at sticking to a routine. I'm actually quite routine resistant. I define myself as someone who's a bit higgledy-piggledy, a bit ad hoc with my schedules. And this project in and of itself has actually really helped me to embrace that part of me. That said, I think even the routine resistant among us, there's things that we sometimes want to implement in our days. There might be new habits that we want to pick up, or tired habits that we'd prefer to put down for some time, whether that's getting better sleep, exercising more. There are things that we want to do, and it can be difficult to find the motivation, the discipline, the consistency. And sometimes I think that those very things are elusive, and they can be the very blocks to picking up these habits that we want to in our days. So I much prefer this method of looking for your first domino, which then has, like the game dominoes, a knock-on effect of making the other habits that you wish to cultivate in your days easier, almost effortless, seamless. They knock over one by one without you having to do much more than knock the first. It's a bit of an experiment to find your first domino. And just in recent weeks, it's been interesting to see, as someone who doesn't have a routine, suddenly picking up many things that seem like they're quite routined. So I've recently been meditating twice a day, morning and in the late afternoon. I have been exercising. I have been doing my morning pages consistently. And I credit all these things to my first domino, which is not drinking alcohol. And so what that means for me is I get better sleep, which means I wake up earlier, which means I have more time to fit in meditation and journaling. And I also have more energy to exercise. And because I have more energy to exercise, I sleep better. And so my advice is to not look at necessarily overhauling your whole life at once. If I looked at all those things that I wanted to do, I'd become overwhelmed. Oh, I've got to meditate. I've got to exercise. I've got to be up at this particular time. But instead, just finding that one domino of, I'm not drinking a glass of wine tonight or a bottle of wine tonight. Instead, I am going to read in bed and get a good night's sleep. The rest falls into place. And so that's my routine of the week, is to find your first domino. And I think that that could look different for everyone. And it's just about experimenting with finding that piece and exploring that for as long as that suits. My rut of the week has been about relearning how to mingle post-lockdown. So I was out with some friends and we were mingling about mingling. And this idea that often many of us can feel like we're the awkward one in social situations, especially post-lockdown when we're all feeling out of practice. But often the other person feels equally as awkward. And then we were reflecting on the art of mingling. And I remembered something I learned from my very good friend Bethany. She is a master at the art of mingling and often has wonderful encounters just in her day-to-day life. Something that she told me was about how mingling or making conversation, connecting with strangers, is really akin to the method of improv that she teaches, which is to make an offer. That offer can then be accepted or rejected. If it's rejected, it's not personal. But if it's accepted, then you can extend that offer through the conversation. And I think this is really powerful because if it is just about the offer and whether or not that's accepted or rejected, it doesn't matter so much what that offer is. In fact, the lighter, the more innocuous, the more spontaneous that offer, the less stakes there are. There's less expectation if you're not rehearsing a conversation in your head as you're about to approach someone. And so often the best chance encounters or the best mingling really comes down to not what you say, but the way that you say it and the way that you make that offer in an open-hearted way. So it can be something really innocuous. It can be like saying, oh, wow, those waves are big today if you're looking over the ocean. Or you could simply ask, is this the line for the taco truck? And I had this experience last night just sitting down with a group of people and asking, what time does this thing start? And the people who are open to talking will. It doesn't matter what you say. If you open that door and they're interested in walking through it with you, they'll accept that offer and extend it. And if not, it's not actually personal. They might just not be in the mood to mingle. And so there's just a little lesson that I learned on the art of mingling and relearning how to be in the world as a social human being post-lockdown. If you end up experimenting yourself, please do reach out on Instagram. My handle is extraordinary_routines. And if you enjoy any bits and pieces of these episodes, do feel free to share there. It's lovely to see that you're listening in. On to this week's quandary. Dear Madeline, something I've always struggled with, especially at stressful points in my life, has been the ability to make a decision and stick to it. Even from a very young age, my parents used to say I was a yes-no kid. This constant changing of mind has stayed with me and applies to my work, relationships, and daily decisions about whether to stay or go or choose this over that. Sometimes this means I'll make no decision at all and remain stuck in a situation that's not where I want to be or what I want to be doing. I'll miss out on opportunities or other times regret a decision and feel like I've made a mistake. I was wondering if you have any advice on first knowing what choice to make and then sticking to that choice. Oh, so dear listener, the standstill of indecision. I'm familiar. Often we can be stuck in an indecision spiral because we want to keep all our options open. We want to keep the possibilities alive. But what we can overlook, and something that you point to in your question, is that when we're doing this, when we're trying to keep all of our possibilities alive, our indecision becomes a decision and we can miss out on these very opportunities that we were trying to keep alive. I speak about this very phenomenon in my book, and I think one of the best frames for this is the fig tree metaphor from Sylvia Plath's The Bell Jar. So in this metaphor, Sylvia Plath describes the protagonist as seeing her life branching out before her like a big green fig tree. And from the tip of every branch, there's a fat purple fig where a wonderful future beckons and winks. And one fig is a husband, the other is a happy home, the other is a famous poet, the other is a brilliant professor, and so on and so forth, with all of these incredible possibilities and options for her life. But as she writes, I saw myself sitting in the crotch of the fig tree, starving to death, just because I couldn't make up my mind which of the figs I would choose. I wanted each and every one of them, but choosing one meant losing all the rest. And as I sat there, unable to decide, the figs began to wrinkle and go black, and one by one, they plopped to the ground at my feet. When we are in this standstill of indecision, or the spiral of the yes and the no and the changing of our mind, we are stuck in the crutch of the fig tree, and we starve ourselves to death because all of those opportunities evaporate before us and the indecision becomes a decision. So in trying to find the perfect branch and reach for the perfect fig and choose the right life for ourselves, we miss out on it all. So I return to this metaphor often because it's a great reminder that we can only reach for one fig at a time. But more so, it's the reaching that matters more than the exact fig that we're reaching for. I think that we have to practice reaching for any fig. And like I've mentioned in a previous episode from last season, all about the fear of better options, and I'm happy to link to that in the show notes again, decision-making is like building a muscle. And so that's why reaching for any fig in small moments of our day-to-day lives can help build our decision-making muscle. Even something as simple as flipping a coin when we're stuck in a yes-no spiral about what to have for lunch and sticking with that decision, not second-guessing, can help to build that muscle and, importantly, keeps us moving forward and out of the standstill of indecision. In that episode that I mentioned, I also speak about how there's no such thing as the right decision. And so I still stand by that because we don't actually know where our decision will lead. We can connect the dots looking back, but we're actually only connecting dots of the faintest outlines because the decision we made yesterday is connected to the decision we made the week before that and the decade before that and so on and so forth. So there is no such thing as the right decision. But even knowing this, knowing that we have less control over the outcome of our decisions or where they might lead, we can still experience feelings of regret. And that's something that you point to in your question. And I want to linger on that for a moment because I think it's an important aspect and perhaps what can keep us in the indecision spiral, or maybe even what creates it, because we don't want to have that feeling of regret. We don't want to make a mistake. We don't want to get the decision wrong. And so instead, we stand still. And we can have this kind of experience with really, really big things in our lives, like what you mentioned with work and relationships, but we can also have it with tiny little things. And I think sometimes the small things contain the biggest lessons. So I'm just thinking back to a tinge of regret that I had on a very micro level recently. I was catching a bus to get to an appointment and traffic was terrible. So the bus had stalled and we were sitting in the same spot for I think 10 minutes. And looking at the time, I realized I only had 3 minutes to get to my appointment and I had no idea whether the bus was going to move. And I could see it was inching closer and closer to a upcoming bus stop. And so I had to make a decision. Do I get out at this bus stop and run to my appointment? Or do I stay on the bus in case as soon as we turn the corner, we'll get moving? And so in that moment, I decided to get off the bus and I rushed around. And when I was just about to reach my destination, I noticed that the same bus went by and passed me. And in that moment, I had that familiar tinge of regret. Why did I bother getting off the bus? I've arrived at the same time and I'm at the same place anyway. And I lamented it. And in that moment, I thought about bigger decisions I've made in my life that I've lamented. And why did I do that just to end up seemingly in the same place? I'm unchanged by this decision. And then I thought, well, maybe that's so. Maybe I have arrived at the same place at the same time. Maybe it does appear like I'm unchanged or the outcome is the same. But I think it's not so much when we arrive, but the way in which we arrive. If I had stayed on the bus, I would have remained stalled and stagnant. I would have been anxiously peering out the window and at my phone, checking the time, seeing if we're moving. I would quite literally not be in the driver's seat. I would have no idea about how late I would be. But getting off the bus meant that I put myself in the world. I had agency. I knew that I'd be exactly 6 to 7 minutes late because I knew that that's how long it took to race around the corner to get to the appointment. At the same time, I'm also getting my step count up that day. I'm getting my heart rate up. It is movement rather than stagnation. And therefore, I arrive slightly stronger. I arrive with more of a sense of control and agency. I arrive feeling more alive. So I think the lesson there is that we don't know what is the right decision or what will get us there faster or more efficiently. When faced with a choice to either move or to stay stagnant, I think we should move. At the very least, we can make the informed choice that puts us more into the driver's seat where possible, the one that puts us more into the world where possible, the one that will present more of a challenge but be more rewarding, like getting off the bus and running. It's far more thrilling than sitting there looking at my phone. And we can choose the decision that excites rather than perpetuates anxiety. So move out of the bus and into the world. And so when we start making decisions from that place, the place of what puts me more in the world, what gives me greater engagement or more opportunity or more energy over anxiety, I think we start to sit with our decisions in a more confident way, and the yes-no spiral starts to diminish. When we look back, we can remind ourselves that we made the best decision we could at the time with the knowledge that we had. So to recap, indecision is a decision, and so an antidote there is to reach for any fig to build that muscle of decision-making and take comfort in the fact that there really is no such thing as the right decision, because we don't know where our decisions will lead. If we begin to make decisions from the place that is more on the side of putting ourselves in the world, choosing what enlivens us, choosing the option where we will learn the most or become stronger or become lighter, more engaged, more challenged by something, or at the very least, the decision that gets us out of a standstill, then we know that we are at least enacting change for ourselves and movement, and we are getting into the driver's seat of our own life wherever possible. So when you can, choose to move, be in the driver's seat, be in the world, choose what will bring you to the side of life, not anxiety and stuckness. Thank you for listening to this episode of Routines and Ruts. If you'd like more of my thoughts on navigating the stumbles of productivity guilt, please do pre-order my book. Chapters delve even further into this idea of the standstill of indecision, so I think you'll get a lot from it. You'll find a link in the show notes, along with a link to where you can ask questions to be considered for an upcoming episode. You can also follow me on Instagram at extraordinary_routines and say hello there, maybe share any experiments or your routines and your ruts. I'll be sharing more soon, and until then, remember, as Mr. Rogers said, you rarely have time for everything you want in this life, so you need to make choices, and hopefully your choices can come from a deep sense of who you are.